Masechet Sanhedrin. We're learning Perek Shlishi, Daf Kaf Hei, Amud Bet 25b. I think. Yes, towards the bottom of the page. Where will we look? Three lines from the bottom. Avua de Rav Zera. Right, we just learned yesterday that the Braita added in additional disqualifications. People who are disqualified from being judges or witnesses, and those were cattle herders and tax collectors. Yopi. Now, we're done with the halacha.
Now, what about herders of goats and sheep?
Where are you from, Daniel?
Romania.
Romania. Cool, very nice. Do you know Hebrew?
I know some words, but I don't know everything.
Okay, that's all right. That most of us don't. Also, we know a few things and a lot of things we don't know. So.
I'm learning.
You're in a good class. You're in a good class to learn. Tough. Okay, so we're learning here in Masechet Sanhedrin who's allowed to be a judge and who's allowed to be a witness. And we're learning there are different people that they're not allowed to be witnesses, they're disqualified. And the Mishnah told us a list of different types of people. Now, under Torah law, the Torah has its own rules. Anyone who's a thief can't be. But additionally to that, there are people who have a taste of theft in their hands, like gamblers, pigeon racers. And here we learned three other additionals. People who are shepherds, because they graze their flocks on other people's lands. And tax collectors. Tax collectors because they were known to take more than they were meant to. And therefore, they had the money, the extra money that they were taking was like theft. Okay, so we learned that was halacha. You asked a question about.
You mentioned cattle herders, but not about goat herders or sheep herders.
Yes, so. Because the Braita only brought cattle herders. Right?
Okay.
I'm wrong. The Braita bore all herders.
Right, that's right.
And then Rava had a discussion about whether we were talking about herders of sheep or herders of cows. The difference between small animals like sheep and large animals like cows. And there's a different rule applying to each one. So Rava initially said that both applied, both sheep herders and cattle herders were disqualified. We then refined that and said cattle herders are only disqualified if they are grazing the land and not if you're growing them. If you're raising them on a farm and you're a shepherd who raises cattle, you're not disqualified. Only shepherds who graze cattle are disqualified. But in the case of sheep, all shepherds apparently are disqualified. Then finally at the end, Rabbi Yehuda said, Stam ro'eh pasul, stam gabay kasher. And stam ro'eh, a shepherd that we don't know anything about, he is considered to be disqualified. We consider him to be in the category of one of those who is grazing his sheep on or animals on other people's lands, and therefore he's not qualified to be a judge or witness. But in the case of a tax collector, if we don't know anything else about him, he's not disqualified. He is only disqualified if we find out that he's over-collecting, overcharging.
That's why I brought up sheep and goats as shepherds.
Okay, Yofi. Great. So, Tov, that's the end of the Gemara's discussion of the halakha, and then we're finishing now this section with a story, a bit of agadah. As follows. Avodu Rav Zeira avad gavaitu talesa shan. Rav Zeira's father, the Avua, the father of Rav Zeira, he worked as a tax collector for 13 years. Kihalatai resh nahara lamata. When the, here it says district chief, the chief of the river, resh nahara, the head of the river, apparently means that the district, I don't know why he was called that, but the translation here says district chief. The chief, the one in charge. He was a...
Could be.
Maybe. Oh, so river traffic. You could put tolls on the amount of traffic going through.
Oh, I see. On the head of the river. Okay, could also be that. Yofi. So Rav Zeira's father was the tax collector for that area. When the chief, the boss, would come to town, Kihava Chazei Rabbanan, if he would see Rabbanan, if he would see the rabbis in the street, the tax collector, Amrula Amalahe Lehu, he said to them, Lech Ami Bo Bachadrecha, go my people into your rooms. Go and hide. The chief of the local district is coming. Go and hide. Ki hava chaze inshe demata. When he would see the people of the town, Amar, he would say to them, Resh nahara ata, the head of the river, the district chief is coming, lamata, to town. Vaha idna, and today, or now or today, nachis abba lefum bara, ubara lefum abba. So that phrase over here means that the father will be slaughtered in the presence of the son, and the son will be slaughtered in the presence of the father. What does that mean? Rashi says on that, the last line of Rashi, Yishchot et ha'av lifnei haben, right, that the father will be slaughtered in front of the son, klomar, that's to say, Yigva mehen mamon, he will take from them money. He's going to take money from them. I'm not sure exactly what the relationship is between slaughtering them, except to say maybe what occurs to me is that we know the fact that a person who has their money taken from them is as if they're dead. Right? We learned that from Yaakov Avinu when he went to Lavan. And Esav was very upset with him still and wanted to kill him. He sent his son Eliphaz to kill him. And Yaakov left Yitzhak's house, his father's house, with a lot of money and wealth that he gave to him. They were very rich people. So he said to Eliphaz, don't kill me, take all my money and it will be considered as if I am dead. And you will have fulfilled the word of your father. He wanted to fulfill his father's word. He didn't want to kill him, but he wanted to fulfill his father's word. So he told him, take my money and it will be as if I was dead. So he took his money, and we learn from there, the person who loses his money is as if he's dead. Which is why especially like Balei Teshuva, who fall into difficult financial situations, often it's a kapara, because really they deserve the...
Wasn't there in the first place?
Wasn't there in the first place, but Hashem was being kind. And, right, the dinim and the katrim, the katrugim, that say that, look, this person committed lots of offenses that deserve the death penalty. And so they take away a person's money, and that's considered as if he's dead. And that's a kapara. So that's one thing. So here, that's why when Yaakov got to Lavan's house, he didn't have any money. He had to work for Achalei Leah for 14 years. He didn't have what to pay for them. He wouldn't have met Eliphaz on the way. It would have been a fairly quick stopover. Nice to meet you. Come in. Have some lunch. find my daughter, off you go. Different story. Anyway, everything is for good reason. Tom, so, rest is our history. So, that's what he said. He told the people to hide, because otherwise the district chief is going to see them and take money. What do you mean that they're going to take money? It means that they're going to get assessed for tax. Right? If he sees that there's a lot of people in the town, so he's going to put up the tax bill. Ramzeira is trying to lower the tax bill because he's a good guy. Like, there's no one here. Who are you going to collect tax from? Right? We've got five guys in a sheep. How much do you want me to collect? Right? But if he comes to town, he starts seeing all the people. It's going to be... tax is going to go up.
His father was a tax collector.
His father, the father of Rav Zera. We don't know who his name. We just know Rav Zera is the main person, right? He's named. And the father, he was great in the fact, in as much as the fact that he did this. He's in the Gemara, he made it to the page, but not by name.
Also, there's a footnote, number 8, on the next about jailing people.
Who?
The king could jail people for not paying taxes, and the prison conditions were such that it posed a threat on life.
Okay, so that could also be. Right, although the Rashi does say, it's as if to say that they'll kill him, as if to say that they'll take the money from him. Right, so that's the Rashi explanation is based on that. People would always call me to know if there's a Torah class happening. People would advise if you wish to call for such good reason. Tov, just something to note, I'm going to point it out, the first time I've seen it, it probably might happen elsewhere in the Gemara. But you'll note that if you look at the bottom of the page, at the bottom of the Rashi, look at the last Rashi, right? Dibor Hamatzchil, the beginning word, Biganzu. Now, what's unusual about that, that's why I'm putting it out, is it's actually not on this page. It's not on this page. If you turn over the Daf, it's the first word on the next page. This is an instant. One of the only instances I've ever seen where the typesetter in the whole of the Talmud didn't get the Rashi on the right page.
They always put the last word, the first word of the next page on the previous page. So
yeah,
that's
but
okay.
Yeah, so you know what the next page is.
But the way that the Gemara, the page of the Gemara is put together, you almost never ever see that. And this was in the days before you had word. Everything just pushed it on, right? To get everything, all the Tosfot on all the Rashi, and one of the only places I've ever seen that the Rashi is not the right page.
What the word is?
Huh?
What word it is?
The Ganzu.
It's
what?
The answer is hidden.
It's hidden. Anyway,
but they need to know what's on the next page so that they can double check it when they're printing.
Right, to make sure the next page follows them there in the right order. Yofi Tov. Anyway, so that it is. That's the end of that little story, but not the end of the father of Zera. Umiganzu kule alma. And miganzu kule alma. Everyone would go into hiding when the chief came. The tax collector, who was Rav Zera's father, would tell everybody to hide so that he didn't see them, and they wouldn't put the tax up because you'll see there's a lot of people in the town, and you'll put the tax up. So he told them all to hide, to pretend that there's not a lot of people in the town, and the tax would stay low. Ki'ate amale, when he came, he said to him, right, my father said, Rav Zera's father, the tax collector, said to the chief, Miman nibai, from whom are we going to collect? There's no one here. This is a town of two dogs, a cat, and a donkey. No one lives here. There's no tax. What tax do you want to collect from these guys? When he died, Amalehu, he said to them, right? He said to his sons, he said to Rav Zera, Shekulu tleisa ma'e. Take 13 ma'e ma'ot, 13 coins ma'ot. That sire li besidnai, that I wrapped in my handkerchief. Vahadule lif lanaya. And give them back to Plony, the Flanaya, to Plony, to so and so. Give them back to a specific person. Top of Kafvav Amudala. Deshakaltinhu mine veloes trachivuli. I took them from him, but I didn't need them. I collected this tax from so and so, a specific individual. Ended up not needing them. I managed to get away with paying less tax, convincing the governor that we didn't need. So, although I validly collected it, right? It wasn't like he stole money. He didn't take extra money from someone he shouldn't have taken. It was like additional money that the governor didn't ever collect it, but for whatever reason, he didn't need to pay it on.
Probably had to collect a certain amount of money. He collected too much.
Maybe. Or maybe as a result of the people hiding, they reduced the tax, and he had an over amount. So we see from here. What do we see from here? Why do we have this story?
Yeah, they're putting on one.
So we see from here that that there are tax collectors who are righteous. So that's why maybe on the back of Rav Yehuda's statement. That a stamp tax collector is considered to be okay, because we do have instances where they're okay, but we don't have stories. Apart from David HaMelech, we don't have stories of shepherds who
were.
They were all shepherds. All of them were.
But it's a great story about two of them. That why they were, because Boko chose them.
Nachon chose them because they looked after the sheep.
Because they know this is the weak sheep, that the strong sheep like pushing him off, and if you know how to deal with the sheep, you will know how to deal with my
people.
Yeah.
So, but maybe we can say the difference. That was the avot, and right, and here we're talking nowadays. Nowadays, the shepherds are not the not the level of them. Huh?
Better.
Truth is, nowadays you don't see that many Jewish shepherds.
No, you see a lot of Arab shepherds.
Arab shepherds. In this country, you see a lot of Arab shepherds.
They graze on the parks.
Quite everywhere. See them a lot in the Gush. Gush and the Shomron. Nice and grassy. Anyway, Tov, that is the end of that sugya. We're now up to date, Shana Shvi'it, learning about Shvi'it. What do we say? So we said in our Mishnah that the Shvi'it gatherers were disqualified. People who gathered produce on Shemitah Yeh were disqualified. Let's have a look. What did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said like this. Okay. So the Mishnah lists those who are disqualified, right? The one who plays dice, the one who lends on interest, pigeon flyers, the sofrei shvi'it, and those who who are dealing in shvi'it produce. Amar Rabbi Shimon said that tachila hayu korin otam osvei shvi'it. Originally they called these people shvi'it gatherers, osvei. They weren't selling them, they were gathering apparently. They were gathering shvi'it. Misha rabuha nasim chazu lekrotan sochrei shvi'it. However, when the anasim, which here translates as oppressors, increased, they changed to calling them Shvi'it merchants.
But what it means here, Anasim? What the meaning here of Anasim? What they do?
Okay, so we're going to see now. So the Gemara is now going to look at that story and say, well, exactly that question about Melissa. Well, what is this Anasim? What were they doing that they were originally called Shviat gatherers, and then we changed and called them Shviat merchants. And which one are disqualified? They're disqualified if they gather, they're disqualified now only if they sell. What exactly is going on? It's not 100% clear, that's what the Gemara is going
to... And what they've seen, in basically, because you're not allowed to touch this the corp, you can't touch it, and like if someone take for him, but you, all the problem that you sell it, this is the problem.
So, the halacha on this is not clear from the Gemara. The Gemara we're going to read now is not so clear. The poskim are going to give halacha exactly what you can do and what you can't do, but from the text of the Gemara we're going to see it's not so clear exactly what the prohibition was. Whether the prohibition was
set,
the issur, whether the issur was on selling it or on gathering it, whether you're allowed to sell it, whether it's only after a certain time, which calls mana biur, and only after that time you're not allowed to gather it or sell it. Is it the gathering or selling? What's mana biur?
We're going to like biur chametz.
Yeah. So we're going to see this in the sugya now. But we're going to, the mana biur is that there's a time when the produce is finishes being
in the field that the wild animals can eat.
Right. It's leftovers, but it, generally speaking, it finishes being fresh in the field. Right, there might be stuff left over, but it's sitting there rotting, whatever. Generally speaking, people stop picking it. Right, it might be left for the animals, but people, after a certain point, you are not going to pick those grapes anymore. Right, they might still on the vine, but I'm not going to. Right, every produce has its own zman habiur, according to when it finishes being ripe, when it finishes being edible. Right? At the time of biur, what's the rule? So the law on Shviat is that at the zman habiur, there's a change. What's that? That up until that point, a person is allowed to take stuff and store it in their house. Right? If you like grapes, and your neighbor has a vineyard, and Baruch Hashem, it's Shemitah year, and you can walk in and take as much as you like. So, your feet, I'm going to take a whole big barrel full of grapes, and I'll eat what I eat, and the rest I'll use for raisins, I'll use for wine, whatever I'm going to do with them. I can do that. However, at some point in the season, on Zman HaBiur, when the grape harvest is finished and there's no grapes left on the vine really to eat, and I've still got half a barrel left of my neighbor's grapes, then my obligation halachically in Shemitah years, I have to take them out of the house and make them hefka. There's no argument what you can do. You can take them out of the house and make them hefka, then you can take them back. People do that today in Shemitah year. Shemitah year today, people don't normally store stuff, but what they do have, for example, is grape juice or wine or something like that. You take it out of the house, stick it in the road, and say three times, you need three people in front of three people, this is hefka, and then you can take it back if they don't take it first.
Normally you take
this is hefka.
you bring it with three of your friends.
Three of your
friends. They're kosher.
I mean, truth is, you don't really get to have a lot of stuff that you're storing in.
You can't say.
What's it going to be, a bottle of grape juice that's worth 20 shekels? I know. It's not usually a big problem. It might be more of a problem for store owners, right? I don't know how that works halakhically, what they do when they get three of the guys who are working on the shelves in and make them hefka. I know. There's probably something they have to do.
Well, they normally, I think the time when it's Pesach, we covered it with Rabbi Yishai.
Ah, oh, very good. Yes, Pesach, yeah, that one's about, I don't know what for.
Yeah, there's Pesach and Hanukkah are the two major times for produce.
And that's, they have a halachic big day. Okay. Your feet, okay. Top. So that's the introduction. So, let's see what the Gemara is going to tell us about this Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon said like this. So we're now quoting the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah said in the name of Rabbi Shimon, "Batchila hayu korim ato osfei shviit." Originally, they were called osfei shviit, shviit gatherers. Right? That's the quote from the Mishnah. So on that part, the Gemara is now going to talk about that. My Ka'ama, what is he talking about? What does he mean to say? What's he saying? Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda explains like this. Hachi Ka'ama, this is what he's saying. That Tchila Hayu Omrim Osvei Shviyit Kesherin and Sofrei Pasuk. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, his explanation of the Mishnah is like this. What does the Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says originally they were called gatherers and then later on they were called merchants, right? So he says originally they were Hayu Omrim Osvei Shviyit Kesherim. Originally they said that the Osvei Shviyit, those who gathered Shviyit, were kosher. They were fine. They weren't disqualified from being judges or witnesses. They were just gatherers, right? You're allowed to gather. Sochrim Basulim. But those who are selling the produce, those are the ones that are disqualified.
And so should you allowed to take it for your need? You need to eat it, so you don't have to give to your family or something.
Right. Alright. Right, look, you could say, it depends what the gathering was, you could suspect it would be reasonable, maybe, I'm suggesting it would be reasonable to suspect that those who gathered large amounts were not keeping so strictly to the laws and not selling it, right? Because otherwise, why are you gathering so much? So you could have said, there's room to say here, that even the gatherers should be disqualified because they're at least suspect. But that's not what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, no, gathering is fine. And merchants, they're the ones who are disqualified. Right, and so what does the rest of the Mishnah mean now? That once the oppressors increased, then they changed. So he explains like this. Mishirabu Matsie Ma'ot. When they're increased, Matsie Ma'ot, La'aniyim, Va'azle Aniyim, Va'asfule Umaitu. When they increased the numbers who would pay money to poor people, Va'azle Aniyim, and then the poor people would go and collect and bring it to them. Chazru Loma Echadze V'Chadze Pasulim. They changed their mind and said, both this and both this are Pasul. What did they see? They saw that because gathering wasn't prohibited, you're allowed to take. So people started, you can only take so much for yourself, right? There's a big vineyard, right? If you're going to go and take, how much can you carry home with you? Right? Unless the vineyard's next door to your house, right? The vineyard's in wherever it is. So, you know what? Shvita year, go and get some grapes from the third hill on the left, 3 miles away. Bring them home for lunch. So you gather, you take what you can, and that's fine. But once people saw that actually they're paying poor people, right, to, yeah, 10 guys, come, we're going to go and strip that vineyard, right, and take them back to my house, I'll pay you to do it, right? Then they said, even the gatherers, that's one, oh, we're not allowed. You're now also suspect of financially gaining in a way that's not appropriate. Like just like the gambling, just like the pigeon racing and all the other ones, the tax collectors who take more, you're now in that category of taking property, even though it's not against the law, it's not against halakha. If it was against halakha, we wouldn't need to list them in the Mishnah, right? You'd just be theft and you'd be disqualified. But now you've brought yourself into that category of, you're within the letter of the law, but it's not right. That might be rabbinically. It might be rabbinically now that they said that. But Deraita it's not. So you wouldn't be guilty of theft if you took more than that. You'd be guilty of rabbinically not of taking too much. It might well be connected to this, that it's not acceptable to take more than you reasonably need for your own for three meals.
For 3 meals.
Right. Rabbinic halakha, right? It means that if you overrid it and you did it, you wouldn't be stealing, but you'd be going against that halakha. The rabbis said that it's not appropriate to do that.
So three meals would be a day and a half of produce.
Yeah, although, how much more interestingly, a friend of mine, Yosef Packer, who was my chavruta, Nachum Meir, about 6-7 years ago, however long it was. He told me once that he's writing a book, Baruch Hashem, Mitzvah Hashem, which should be finished soon. He's writing it for a few years now. But in the history of his family in Russia, whatever, and he had all these notes and diaries that were passed down to the family. Anyway, it says in one of the diaries that they used to live, have a farm or whatever, and the son, he was a worker on the farm, and every morning for breakfast, he would have 24 eggs. 24 eggs.
One guy.
That would be his breakfast, 24 eggs.
Is it also a bunch of milk?
So we're a different, we're completely different now, right? You have half an egg with a pizza. Right? So who knows what three meals used to be. I just put it out that we don't know what, how much these.
So take it to me, they didn't, not the extreme, then they were going to.
Yeah, probably. Presumably,
right?
What?
Maybe he didn't eat. Also, maybe he didn't eat for the rest of the day. Who knows what that might have been? That means the one meal. So
yeah.
But different, like, but different metabolism. Like, a person couldn't eat that, and couldn't eat that once, and not end up in severe difficulties. In nowadays, they're completely different. Right, different. Anyway, Tov. So where were we? So that was Rabbi Yehuda's explanation, okay, of what the mission is talking about. But it's not the end of the story. The Gemara has a different opinion too. Kashu ba b'nei Rachva. The sons of Rachva had a kasha. They weren't happy with that explanation of Rabbi Yehuda. Haim Shabru Ha'anasim. The Mishnah says Anasim, right? Oppressors. And we've said that when the people who were paying the poor people to go and gather the produce for them increased, right? The payers. They increased. We didn't say oppressors, they weren't oppressing anyone. They weren't gathering people up with whips and chains to go and pick. So why? So that's the kasha of the sons of Rechava, right? It sounds good, but it doesn't fit with the words of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says when the oppressors increase. That doesn't seem to fit with Rabbi Yehuda's explanation, because where's the oppression in what Rabbi Yehuda said? Right? So the kasha is Hai Meshabru Ha'anasim. It should have said Anasim, or it does say Anasim, sorry. Meshabru Hatagrim Mibayale. Right? According to Rav Shimon, it should have said Hatagrim. Hatagrim vendors, sellers.
What's
Misharabu? Misharabu.
Increase.
Right? So that's a good catch on Rav Yehuda. It's a good explanation, but it doesn't seem to fit with the words. How does Anasim fit with that vision? So Ella, rather, so we're going to reject that. Rather, we're going to provide a different explanation. Ella, Patchila Hayu Omrim, originally, Hayu Omrim, they would say, right, this is a new explanation on Mishnah, originally they would say, Echadzeh Bechadzeh Pasulim, they're both Pasul. Both people who gather large amounts and people who sell are disqualified. Mishurabu Hanatsim, but when the oppressors increase, right, we're going to see that. Umay Ninhu, who are the oppressors? Arnona. The Arnona is the oppressor. There you go. Take that to City Hall. Right, the Arnona is it. What's Arnona? So Rashi explains what Arnona is, in case anyone's not sure. Argana, six lines down in the Rashi, give or take. Mas shegova hamelech, the tax which the king collected, min hatvuot, from the produce, kach v'kach, korin, min hasader, v'shana. Such and such an amount of korin, kor. Kor is a measure of produce, measure of barley and kor.
To take
biblical measure.
From the
anyway, such and such measure of barley or measure of produce from this field for a year. That's what Anona originally was. So
take from the crop. That's what?
From the crop, nahon. They would write, from this field, I estimate there's going to be 24 bushels of barley, and I'm going to take two, thank you very much, as my tax.
So that's why they go by the square. Square meters and the number of apartments.
Right? Yeah. Property tax. Tough. Okay, so that's Arnana. That's the oppressors. Why were they oppressors? They were called oppressors because. Did Rashi say, or just a moment? No. Footnote tells me they're called oppressors because if they didn't. If you didn't pay up that tax, that arnona, the king would beat you up, or put you in prison, or charge you a fine. Right? Well, it wasn't a Tom. Might be arnona today, Tom. Right. So when the oppressors grew, so who are these? So these are those are the people who collect the tax. So that's why it's in the plural. The oppressors refer to the people who were, I guess there was an increase in the number of tax collectors actually going out doing that. So what happened as a result of that? How does that change the status of the Jews who were collecting produce on Shvi'at? So the Gemara explains. Kedemachriz Rabbi Yanai, like Rabbi Yanai declared, Fruku v'zuru v'shviit, go out and sow on Shviit, mishum anana, on account of the anana. Rabbi Yanai told the people to go and break Shviit, go and sow the fields on Shviit. Why? Why did he do that? Because. So there's two options. Either we say that it was pikuach nefesh, and for pikuach nefesh you're allowed to override any law of the Torah, including Shviat. Pikuach nefesh did because if they didn't collect the tax, the king was going to either kill them or throw them into jail, and they would feel that was life-threatening situation. And in order to prevent that, they had to save the fields for Shviat. So one explanation is that it was pikuach nefesh. The other explanation is that there is a leniency in the laws of Shviat that you're allowed to work the land in order not to suffer financial loss. And maybe you could rely on that. Apparently, says the Chazon Ish, even if it's not life-threatening. Because it's only rabbinic, right? Because even at the time we're talking about, it was the only rabbinic obligation on Shviat, on Shemitah. So the rabbis could, in the case of financial loss, waive the rule. And maybe that's, we can say, what Rabbi Yanai was doing. As a result of the fact that the king was now collecting more tax, or the tax were increased. So therefore, how does that affect our Mishnah? Chazru lomar, they changed and they said, Osfin kesherim sofin basulim, that those who gather are kosher and those who sell are disqualified. So originally, even the gatherers, you weren't allowed to gather produce on Shviat, like talking large amounts, according to this explanation. And so you're also disqualified if you're found doing that. But once the king came, and they had to change the rule and allow people to sow the fields in order to pay the tax, then those who were gathering it were considered to be gathering it because they needed to pay the tax, right? You've got to pay the tax. So how are you going to pay the tax? There's no work. on Shviyat. So you need to go and gather. So you're allowed. We're not disqualifying. You're not doing it because you're financially suspect of impropriety of, right, with taking other people's property. But those who are selling it, they're still disqualified. And that's why there was a change in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says originally they only the gatherers, and then we changed to merchants. That's the other way of explaining what our Mishnah is talking about, the switch between gathering and selling produce.
During Shabbat, we were sent to exile because of the Shemitot that we didn't do.
Yeah.
I think it even says that in the Klal Tochicha, whatever.
Yeah,
it
sure.
But and then the person who's speaking is not sure. He doesn't think it was resumed in the period of the second Bayit.
Right. Yeah, it's not clear.
Period.
Okay.
Why are we so trying to be so strict about it today, when then they weren't?
If we had
a Beit Mikdash, we weren't, and now that we don't have one, we're going, you know, crazy.
I don't think it's. The truth is, I don't think it's like that. Meaning, I don't think it sounds like that, but I think on both sides. First of all, I don't think we're going so crazy, and actually. Although the reason why we pay attention to it is because it's novel and it's interesting and it's exciting and there's and it's every 7 years and it's right and there's a whole big hubble right, but we're not that strict. We're really not that strict. Currently the general view is it's still rabbinic. There was 7 years ago they said that the next Shemitah might well be Deraita because the majority of Jews will be in Eretz Israel, and next Shemitah is going to be very different because it's going to be Deraita and everything. I've not heard anyone a peep. I'm not in touch with like the world, but I've not heard anyone really commenting on the fact that this year's Deraita, you know, and you have to be very careful. So I don't think we are that careful. And I think in terms of what happened in the past, I don't think it was a Dafka. They were lax in a lot of areas, particularly the areas which concerned financial loss, right? And Shemitah was a big financial loss, and it involved a lot of emunah, because they were entirely farming based, right? Everyone.
Today as well.
So it was very difficult for them to 100% abide by the rules, right? For sure, those who were, but you can't, you don't plant in the seventh year, meaning you're having nothing to eat in the. The seventh, can't harvest the seventh or the eighth, and you have to work 3 years, or maybe on the, I'm going to get the brocha that it's going to last 3 years, and maybe I'm not at that level to. So the it's hard to. It's very hard
war,
to.
There was not so much reason then. So the people, they have land, they have to work the minimum on Shemitah because of.
I can imagine that there was a lot of heterim, bikuach nefesh. I've got a family to feed. You know, come on, that's what. There's no more bikuach nefesh than feeding my family, right? You start making all these heterim that really are maybe not. And even if there is a heter, how much? Well, if I'm going to work it, I may as well. No point just taking the sheep out to do a, you know, the ox. Might as well apply the whole thing down here. I know. So you can see it's very easy to lose that. Most of the other laws are not so threatening to an individual and their livelihood and their whole life. Keeping Shemitahs that day and age.
But today it's also financial laws.
But for who? It's financially difficult for the Rami Levy, for Super Soul, for all right, but for and for the grocer, the green grocer, for Ruben, right? But for the right, it's for people who are Dafka connected. For I'm not financially.
No, the farmers.
Affected
the farmers
by the farmers. How many is that people?
Not only the farmers. It's all the like what circle beyond them.
Oh, but they can't do anything about it. Only the farmer himself can break the Shemitah. The guy who comes to work on his land, so all those people who are suffering, they can't break Shemitah. It's not they're going to help them to, what are they going to do? To go and start sowing. I'm going to help them. They can't break Shemitah.
This is Kehilat
Shemitah. But everyone else in the old days, when they all had their own little bit of, so they, if they were suffering, they would go out and start.
So exactly, that is the reason that there is Keren HaShvi'it, yeah. That they made, Badatz made a convention 2 days before Rosh Hashanah. I think that it was, if I remember, they spoke about to the goal to collect like, what to remember, $60 million a very, very big amount of money.
Okay.
Because it's for all the people there. It's not only the farmers. It's many, many, many circles around him.
That's why Rob Cook pulled back Het Mechira.
Those days, the farmers during the Shemitah year became tailors.
Yeah.
I know.
They were good at sewing.
Genau wie vor Schmitta. Das Balakam in der Gartenschöpf. Heute hier, ja, am State of Israel, wo all der Plants, special Plants, für Geranien.
There
was no Geranien für Geranien. Because in Israel, also the States, put all the Plants.
Why?
I have to all the Plants, all the parts of the Geranien. Because the Geranien is not here.
Are they last?
They last for all the Geranien. They change 3 times, 4 times a year, they change the plants.
Yeah.
You see the, but all the plants.
So the so state.
We came to the garden, there was nothing.
The state holds by Shemitah?
Huh?
The state keeps Shemitah?
They're not plants.
But I'm sure they do upkeep. I'm sure they still cut the grass and stuff, no? In the pots?
Yeah, you can cut grass.
You can. And all the way down to the.
Yeah. In the other way.
Tov, how are we doing? A few minutes. Okay. Tov.
Oh, did we do Rashi?
Yeah, so good. Let's do Rashi because the next bit is a start of a bit of a longer sugya. We raised a quiche that maybe it's good to do in one bite. So let's just have a look at the Rashi. It's really exciting over here. No, okay, not that page. The Rashi, about 10 lines down, the Rashi, Fukuzuru b'shviit, go and plant on Shviit. So Rashi says, Shviit v'zman hazeh, Shviit at that time, Durabanan. It was Durabanan, right? It wasn't the writer. Why? The Batla Kedushat Ha'aretz, because the Kedusha of the Aretz was cancelled. Right, that's why it's rabbinic. So why is it rabbinic? Why is it not the writer? So Rashi says here, the reason why is the Kedusha of the land was cancelled.
How come? The Kedusha of the land is cancelled?
Apparently so. Assuming that we're talking about after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Or after the exile of the Babylon, same thing. Right, well, not the same thing, but, right? As a result of that, the Kedusha of the land is cancelled, whatever that means. I don't know. I don't know what it means. They're the words. The Kedusha of the land is cancelled. What
does that
mean? The result is that it's the Rabbanan.
It's written that the eyes of the Kodesh Baruch is on Eretz Yisrael Mireshit Hashana Ad Achrita. Why? Not because it's a holy land.
The land remains holy. The site of the Beit HaMikdash is holy. It doesn't matter what's up there, right? but for this purpose, it's cancelled.
Well, Dorf said that too. He said today the whole land of Israel is covered by angels.
Right.
By what?
Angels.
Malachim. So it's covered by angels. The Kedusha is under them. So maybe that's why it's lost in Kedusha. When they leave, it will regain its. But the time comes for these angels to lose their jobs.
You can say that during. Because you don't have the Kedusha. Right. But if you do, then they let you
walk on the
see the diamonds.
Which is why the Gemara says that anyone who walks Dalad Amot in Eretz Israel, he gains Olam Haba. Like, how can that be? You can be a Rasha, the worst Rasha in the world, but you manage to walk 2 meters in Eretz Israel and suddenly have Olam Haba. So Rav Dror explained, no, because you're walking on the angels, you're not actually walking on Eretz Israel. So you don't gain Olam Haba because you didn't walk 2 meters in Eretz Israel. You were floating. You were like, you didn't actually touch the land. You know, you never, whatever that means, to touch the land.
It's good to walk on angels.
You're floating. Top, so you don't. So.
But in that matter, if you're working on yourself, then you're not walking on angels. You're not walking on angels.
At what point at what point you switch to being at that level of Kedusha? I don't know.
I can't answer that question.
Also, look, during the time that Am Yisrael was exiled from the land was being ruled by foreign nations. So there's a good reason to cancel the Kedusha of the land. We don't want the Kedusha being affected by those who weren't worthy to partake of it, right? Which is why when they came and they destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, right? The Gemara says they were grinding already ground flour, right? There was nothing to destroy. The Kedusha already already gone, but they didn't destroy anything. They were destroying stones, right? Because the Kedusha is gone. It shouldn't be that. Thought that the nations have the ability to destroy the Kedusha or to affect it or to root it or to do anything to it. That's why it was desolate, right? And it didn't have the bracha. Now we see the Kedusha coming back. Right? You see the bracha coming back. Right? You see anyone if you ever go in a plane, you don't even need to go in a plane, you can just drive on the roads and you see the green line is the green line. It's not called green line for nothing. It's called green line because at this point the greenery stops and nothing grows. Right? Because it's Kedusha of Eretz Israel. You know when you're entering an Arab village because there are no plants or trees or anything going on there. And it's not simply because they're not planting stuff. It's because there's no Kedusha there. It doesn't grow. And you can have them the very next hill. No one's planting stuff on the hills, and it's full of green. They just drive in Jerusalem. The hills are full of green and trees and this and that, and everything's growing by itself. No one's out there pruning the and digging and whatever. Cross over the road to somewhere where there's no Kedusha and see what's going on there. It's grey, desolate, and horrible. So Hashem's Kedusha is returning. It's returning. And that's maybe what the idea that the land becomes derighter when the majority of Jews come back. Because when the majority of Jews come back, the Shekhinah, the Kedusha, follows where the Jews are. So then the Shekhinah comes back. Then the Kedusha comes back. The Kedusha comes back to the land. The land itself now.
But as you say, we're already seeing it.
It seems to be an incremental thing as opposed to a threshold that nothing. One Jew off the plane, tips the balance, and then I don't know, maybe that as well. But it seems to be, you know, from what we see the land growing, blooming. you're the millionth customer in the store. You could be the one that fixed the balance and brought Moshiach.
The conclusion of what the Rebbe said,
that if we would go out from the borders of Eretz Israel.
Because I feel guilty, and we can't start because
okay.
We feel guilty interrupting you while you're getting shared.
Okay, thank you.
The conclusion is that if we go for out from Eretz Israel, so we're not supposed to see gardens and we was probably this year on Uman. This sofa garden, it's unbelievable.
Right.
Like, so we see that also in Chutzlar, it has very nice plans and all that.
Right. It's not Holy Stone, it's Hashem gives also to the nations as well. He gives them.